May it please the court, this is a case where we're taking an appeal. I represent the plaintiff, Alan Maria Juarez, appeal from the district court's grant of a motion for summary judgment. The motion filed by Menard Inc. Claimed that there was no reasonable evidence to go to the jury on the issue of punitive damages.
Could I just real quick ask you if there was any attempt made to follow up on the discovery answers from Menard regarding the prior acts of falling merchandise or to contact any of these people who had been injured previously to find out how their injuries occurred?
Your Honor, I do not believe that that occurred. And so the answer would be no, to the best of my knowledge. However, I did want to bring, that brings up a good point, I think, because the 16 cases or so, give or take, of falling merchandise is sort of a drop in the ocean of notice in this case. We have
a drop in the ocean?
Well, at least it's only a part of the picture of notice, Your Honor. We have, in addition to the incident,
but notice of what?
Well,
I mean, obviously things fall, so.
Well, things fall, Your Honor.
Every one of these retail stores know that things fall, people trip on them, and so on.
And that may be so, Your Honor. And
well, it is so. I'll tell you that.
And in this particular case, there's not only the problem of people tripping on things and so forth and so on, but there's a pretty well-documented problem having to do with merchandise falling from shelves and either injuring or...
Well, in one of them, as I recall, some kid is playing on a vanity.
Well, Your Honor...
Well, you can't... What is that... How is that notice of what happened to your client? I mean, obviously, thousands of people, hundreds of millions of people probably, over a period of years, traipsing through these aisles and knocking things down or having things fall on them. So you can't, that doesn't enable you to term every one of these accidents into, you know, recklessness, punitive damages.
Well, perhaps not every single instance, Your Honor. In fact, I don't have to say perhaps, not every single instance of a piece of falling merchandise would be willful and wanton. But under the facts of this particular case, what we have is falling merchandise that occurs in, not in the context of someone, you know, a customer doing anything or failing to do anything that caused it, but in the context of a order selector moving doors on
yes,
the shelf.
Your list of circumstances placing on Menard notice, they don't distinguish among these. They have incidents where the customer is at fault, and they're extremely heterogeneous. So what do you have that's similar to what happened here?
Well, I believe there was a case involving a door falling on employees. Additionally, I think we've got the whole issue. I think these 16 instances, or give or take.
No, I really don't think they prove anything at all.
Your Honor,
Doug, you could find 1,000 of these probably.
And Your Honor, I think if you look at let's assume that the 16 instances in and of themselves do not show willful and wanton conduct. There are two things in this case that I think sort of paint the 16 instances and the rest of this case in an interesting light. One is you've got the Inside Edition videotape, and another thing is you have a finding by the district court. The Inside Edition videotape, of course, deals with Home Depot, and what the district court says is sort of interesting. It says that Menards was aware of serious injuries occurred at Home Depot with similar merchandising strategies, and was aware that customer safety could be increased by using spotters and roping off aisles. I don't really think that was a major issue of controversy, even in the district court's
opinion. What had this to do with anything? Suppose you had a 60-minute show that says that General Motors is aware that customer safety could be introduced by steel plating all the cars, by having no more compact cars, everybody has to drive an SUV. Why would that have any bearing on the question whether they are liable in damages, let alone punitive damages, for not making every car an SUV?
And I may not get the gist of your question, Judge.
The gist of my question is that your argument seems to be quite explicit in your brief, that any firm that knows that its activities create a risk and does not abolish that risk has to pay punitive damages. But essentially every firm where the managers have a brain knows that its activities create risks.
Well, I mean, economic...
And they don't act to eliminate the risk. They act under the hand negligence standard to eliminate the risk to a cost-justified extent, but not to make it completely go away.
Economic activity obviously creates risk. In this particular case, however, we not only have passive failing to make the risk go away, or in other words, we not only have someone putting a risk out there by virtue of their business, but we have a warehouse merchandising policy. If in this particular case...
That's just a risk endemic to this business.
And that
you make the warehouse the place where you go shopping, there are more warehouse-like risks. Now, they could make it go away by abolishing the business and presumably raising prices to consumers because they would either take more precautions that are costly or do something else. These are all arguments pro and con on negligence, I understand. I can't conceive what they have to do with punitive damages.
Because in this particular case, Your Honor, we have active misconduct as well. We have not only the creation of a risk through business, and by the way, it's not that doing away with the business is the only way to eliminate the risk. There is a possibility of eliminating the risk here. In fact, the risk could have been eliminated if there were not active
Is there a
misconduct.
Simple way to eliminate the risk?
The way to eliminate the risk in this particular case, Your Honor, there are a number of ways that the risk could have been eliminated. One way is...
What's the simplest and cheapest?
The simplest and cheapest way to eliminate a risk, one of them, is to take information...
There can only be one simplest.
Okay. Take information from employees that are sort of line employees working day in and day out on the floor to institute safety measures, which is what happened.
You're being very vague. I asked you, what is the simplest way of eliminating this risk?
The simplest way of eliminating this risk would have been to take the suggestions of Menard's employees
to coordinate
off the
island. I don't care what this. What is the simplest way to eliminate the risk?
The simplest way to eliminate the risk of the accident occurring?
Yes.
The simplest way to eliminate the risk is to take the information...
No, it's not to take the... There has to be some method, something concrete that you do. After you've pulled all the suggestions, you've taken the best suggestion, now what do you do?
You could have made the aisle wider, or you
sure.
could have...
You could have had the more protection.
Well, wait a minute. Making the aisle wider is not cheap. Now, what is fall protection?
Fall protection would be placing... A little beam or piece of metal where the door in the path of where the door was falling, which was something that was available to them as an option that wasn't done, for example, and that's not expensive.
No, but then how do you put things in the shelf?
Or get them down.
Well, I mean, obviously that's a matter of engineering.
But that's the whole point. Look. When you get recklessness and punitive damages is where there's something very obvious to be done and it's very cheap relative to the, you know, expected action cost. But you're not able to specify something that's, you know, cheap and obvious and any reasonable person would do it and...
Warn the customer.
Look up at all times.
No, one of the customer, Your
not
Honor.
Not to go to Menards?
Not to go to Menards. But because the evidence was that the risk occurs when you're moving merchandise, if you're moving doors in an adjacent aisle or in the same aisle, the customer could be warned.
Well, wait, I don't understand that. You mean...
Why don't you give them hard hats?
You mean something is going on in another aisle, and what, you're supposed to scurry over and close the adjacent aisle?
Well, Your Honor, I think that certainly taking the option to do nothing when they're aware of a risk.
What if the shelves had been wider? Would that have helped?
It's a possibility, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Zerzik. Mr. Wilkins?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Throughout plaintiff's brief and in the presentation today, there's been a great deal of discussion about what Menards did or did not do to make the ferries safe. That's not the issue, though. The only issue today is whether or not the plaintiff came forward with sufficient evidence to show the requisite state of mind of Menards. Not if they were negligent or not, but did they know that this accident was going to happen?
At the time of the incident, what was Menards' procedure for keeping customers out of the aisle where the merchandise was being stocked?
The record shows that the employees were instructed to keep customers away from the area where the merchandise was being loaded. And the other thing that happened that made the area safer was that the machines that actually placed the merchandise up on the rack had a red light that circulated, and they also would beat the horn whenever this machinery would move. Exactly. And there was nothing done. There was nothing done on the opposite aisle because this accident was not anticipated as happening in this way. So there's nothing in the aisle behind where the loading is taking place that was done.
But 16 incidents of falling merchandise that we know of is quite a lot. I mean, in 3 years' time. How much evidence would it take before the issue could have gotten to the jury?
I don't think it's a question of the quantity of evidence, Your Honor. It's a question of the quality of evidence. What's missing here is anything that links these prior examples to this accident. For example, there is no explanation of the cause of any of these accidents. And as Judge Posner pointed out, one of these accidents specifically says on the list that it happened because a youngster was climbing on a vanity. There is nothing indicating that these accidents happened when merchandise was being stocked. And more importantly, there is nothing in the record anywhere to indicate that Menards knew that there was a likelihood that a customer shopping on an adjacent aisle would be injured.
Well, wait a minute. Wouldn't anyone of average intelligence understand that if you push on the back side of a loaded shelf, items are going to fall off on the front side?
It certainly was in reason to think that this was a possibility that this was going to happen. But we're not talking about negligence again here, Your Honor. And don't get me wrong, Menards was very negligent here. They were negligent. The jury found them to be negligent, and Menards immediately paid the judgment that was entered against them. Could it have been made safer? Absolutely. I think it could have been made safer. But that does not rise to the level of a mental state that is needed in order to impose punitive damages. And that's been our point throughout the situation, is whether it's the 16 incidents, whether it's the tape of how Home Depot conducts their business, or whether it's Mr. Orange's affidavit, there's just nothing here that allowed the court to go beyond a negligent standard and start to look at the real state of mind. And that's what we're talking about here. The standard that the plaintiff had to show was that Menards was aware of an impending danger and acted with heedless indifference for that danger. And we just don't get there. We certainly get to negligence, and we don't really dispute that, certainly not at this stage of the case. But we just don't get to the mental state needed. We've talked a little bit about the 16 other incidents. Let me move on to a couple of the other things. The video is especially troubling, I think, in terms of punitive damages. What they really seek to do here, what the plaintiff really seeks to do here, is to condemn Menards with the activities of Home Depot. And that's just not appropriate. I mean, we cannot be held responsible for what our competitor does or does not do. Similarly, there is nothing in that video at all that talks about the adjacent aisle situation that we were just talking about. It's not like 2020 came in and said, look out, Menard, when you when Home Depot does this, they knock stuff over on the other side of the aisle. That's not what was going on here at all. And again, as I pointed out, some of the safety suggestions that are contained in that video were incorporated. Maybe not exactly as Home Depot did it, but they were definitely incorporated in the sense of trying to keep customers away from the area, in the sense of giving some sort of warning through lights or sound or what have you to keep customers away. So the video, rather than show some kind of heedless indifference, actually shows that Menard was trying to do some of these very things that are suggested in the video. Again, maybe they didn't do them very well, and we were negligent, and the jury found that, but that doesn't take us to a heedless indifference that justifies punitive damages. Finally, we have Mr. Orange's affidavit, and I encourage each of you to review it and draw your own conclusions about whatever weight should be given to that affidavit. But it essentially does
have
two things.
Have you considered giving hard hats to consumers as they enter the store?
It's certainly an option. Whether or not it would have prevented this particular injury, I don't know. But and I know you're only partially being facetious, but we can't
entirely frightened.
Not entirely. Given the number of things that are falling, the weight of the items and the height from which they fall, it's actually a characteristic of this store. The alternative would be to put a sign at the door saying, "We've done a careful calculation, and if your average annual income exceeds $40,000, you have negative net present value from entering this store. Please proceed accordingly."
I don't think that anyone is going to stand here and tell you that there were not better precautions that could have been taken. And in fact, I am here to say that Menard was negligent. Does that take us to the level where a jury should be able to decide whether or not they had heedless indifference? I don't think so. There might very well be a situation where there were so many prior related similar incidents that you could envision a situation where a case like this gets to a jury on punitive damages, but we're not here. We're not anywhere near here in this particular case.
Mr. Wilkins, I would not take the hard hat idea back with you unless you want to lose every one of your women clients.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will not recommend that to the client. Back to Mr. Orange's affidavit just very quickly. He tries to do two things with the affidavit. He first of all makes the point that Menard rejected some safety ideas that were presented by some of the employees. You'll note that none of those safety ideas had anything to do with adjacent aisles, and that Menard was in fact doing similar things to what some of the employees had suggested. He also tries to add a couple of additional incidents to the 16 that are identified in the exhibit. And those incidents both involve employees. In fact, one of them involves himself. And those incidents are in no way related to the incident that happened here. So what you have before you is a great deal of evidence of negligence, but no evidence that goes to the mental state of Menard, and therefore the district court properly granted our motion for partial summary judgment.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Wilkins, and thank you to Mr. Sturgeon. His time expired. Okay, we'll move to our last.